Hello, welcome to this week's Mood Swings. It's a special one. It's with a man that I've been chasing for almost since I probably started the podcast to come on and chat with me. Is that a lie? No, it's not. It's not a lie. But, you know, I don't know if I have been chasing him quite so much as I've suggested it quite a few times and he said, I don't quite know how to explain it. He just, whenever it's been proposed to him, he's not seemed that keen. I mean, at first, when I first started the podcast, I suppose I was very keen on speaking to people who had quite strong stories to tell, I suppose. And Thomas probably wouldn't have fallen into that category at that time. But as the podcast went on, you know, I thought, me and Thomas always have a good laugh, we've got a good chemistry. He, you know, he understands all these things. He'd be good to have on, but he never felt he had enough to talk about. And then, a while ago, I proposed that he come do one of these special movie ones, because we both like a lot of the same films and are both big film fans. And he said he'd probably be up for that. But he, again, still didn't seem that keen or that convinced. And then I sprung this on him on Saturday. I started mailing him Friday night after I went to see this film the first time. And then all day Saturday, I bombarded him with requests about, let's go see Mid-90s tonight. I've already seen it, but you're going to love it. Let's go see it together. And after I wore him down with that and planned a Saturday night for him, I said, I've got a great idea. Why don't we go see it at the early screening? Then we'll go for some curry or for a meal somewhere. Have a couple of beers, go back to mine, and we'll do a movie podcast about it. And I mean, he'd already given up his evening to me at that point, so he had little excuse. So I had him right where I wanted him. But I'm glad I did, because we had a great night. We snuck a few beers into the cinema in plastic bags. We were very worried that we'd be rumbled, but it didn't seem like the cinema staff cared at all. Not that I'm endorsing this activity. And when we got into the screen, there was only one other person in the whole screen with us. And I think they were on it. Well, I say I think. I'm 90% sure. I almost know for sure that this other person was on it by the amount of times they went off the toilet and by the fact that I could hear cans being opened. I mean, I suppose they could have just been having a lot of fizzy pop, but I doubt it. I doubt it, guys. So yeah, thanks to Thomas for doing this episode. If you don't, I think we maybe mentioned it at the start of the podcast, but he's the guy that did the theme music for the podcast as well, so he's had some contribution from the very, very beginning. So thanks to him for that, and thanks for doing this podcast. It's all about the film Mid-90s. It's in the cinemas, but I think you can get it. I looked today, I'm pretty sure you can get it on Blu-ray already. So it was released in the US last year, so I think you'll probably be able to get a digital download of it somewhere, and you'll undoubtedly be able to stream it somewhere. So if you want to watch the film before you listen to the podcast, I'm pretty confident you'll be able to find it. So pause this and go watch it. It's only 85 minutes long, so it's not that big a commitment. But it's absolutely brilliant. I loved it. It's Jonah Hill's writing and directing debut, and as we discuss in this podcast, it's maybe not what you'd expect from him. All right, I'll be back at the end. Cheers. Special Mood Swings episode with my friend Tam. I don't know if you don't know Tam, then he's the man responsible for that little bit of intro music you always hear every time you listen to a Mood Swings episode. So if this is your first one, then you've hopefully just heard the music, unless you've skipped right to this bit. And if it's not your first one, then you've heard it many times. How you doing, Tam?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm alright.
You fool. You fool, Curry.
Very. We went to the cinema to see the film that we're just waiting to discuss, and then we went for a curry, our favourite. Well, it's my favourite. Is it your favourite?
Yeah. Well, it's one of my favourites. Yeah. In terms of price, it's.
In terms of price.
You can't fault it.
Let's just do the advert. Maybe we'll get a sponsorship out of this. But
I think you're probably overdue a sponsorship. Yeah.
It's Lahore Karahi on King Street. It's bring your own booze, which I highly endorse, and it's pretty cheap as well. Yeah. What were you, £31 for?
£31.
Two courses, two people.
Starter, naan, rice, two mains.
Not four naan.
Not four naan. Not mental.
And we're also drinking this, the Fitlight Brewery, which is the beer that's just been launched, and all the profits go to Mental Health Aberdeen. What do you think?
You'd start doing a little ad section, I think, this week. We're doing a Fitlikey Brewery and Lahore Karahi. So
yeah.
Two potential sponsorships.
What do you think of this beer? I've just had one sip so far.
It tastes quite nice. After a few cans of Stella, it's refreshing and hoppy. It's very, very...
Yeah, it's quite light. Like, a lot of craft beers are quite heavy. This is quite light.
Well, you know, I'm not massive on craft beers, but this is a...
Yeah.
This'll do nicely.
Not bad. So the film we're going to discuss is, I mean, this is the third Mood Swings film podcast I've done. The first one was Shame, which had been out for a long time, and the second one was Filth, which had been out for a long time. And this is the first one that I've done that's about a film that's fairly new, especially in the UK. But it's a film called Mid-90s, which I went to see last night with my girlfriend, and have been, if you follow me on Instagram, will have noticed I've been gushing about ever since. And immediately made plans with Thomas to go see it again tonight, and to force him to do this podcast with me about speaking about it.
Yeah, you didn't have to force my hand too much.
You want to see the film or to do the podcast?
I wanted to see the film, and you know, if I had to do the podcast that came along with it, then.
But well, so you didn't have to. I mean that clear with the invitations. Like, we can just go see the film if you want. What did you think of the film, first and foremost?
I really enjoyed it. It wasn't really what I thought it was. I'd not really looked into it or like seen a trailer for it or anything. I knew Jonah Hill was the director, so I kind of assumed that it was maybe going to be some sort of light-hearted romp with lots of weed smoking and stuff.
There's any weed smoking, but there is a little bit.
Is a little bit, yeah. But I guess I was thinking it was going to be like a sort of in the vein of like sort of Seth Rogen sort of films. In my head, I sort of put both of them in the same category.
Yeah. I think a lot of people do. You thought it could be Pineapple Express with children, as well.
Yeah, kind of. I didn't even realise it was about skateboarding until you mentioned it last night when I was chatting to you. But I didn't realise it was solely based around skateboarding. That was quite a nice surprise.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. It was an emotional roller coaster.
Shall we talk firstly about the cinematic experience of sometimes when me and Thomas go to cinema, we like to buy a soft drink, but other times we like to sneak in a few tins.
Well, yeah, I guess we both turned up with unbranded plastic bags, so clearly had purchased a couple of cans from our local off license.
I thought I'd speak about the only other man. So when I went to see the film last night, I wouldn't say that the screen was full, but there was maybe about 30 people in watching the film. When we went tonight, we went to an earlier screening at 6 o'clock, and we were a little bit dubious about sneaking in a few beers. And there was only one other guy in there who was more
sort of pacing up and down the stairs when we came in, wearing a lanyard. So
we thought he might be a staff member at first, and we were worried that he was going to bust us for our beers.
Well, when we walked past him on the stairs, I sort of tried to like hold my bag like away from him, thinking that he was going to ask us what was inside the bag, but it turned out he was probably drinking more than we were in the screen.
He definitely was. When do you think cinema culture changed? Because for a long time, it really was a faux pas to take your own, not just alcoholic drinks, but like any drinks or snacks was pretty much forbidden by the same staff.
yeah, well, like I said earlier on, I saw a tweet a while ago. It was like, the tweet was some long lines of, it took me to the age of 30 to realise that it wasn't an actual crime to bring in your own snacks into a cinema.
I know.
But I guess that sort of extends to beers as well. I don't know.
I know, but
no one really seems to care.
I think for a long time they did care.
Yeah.
I remember hearing people say like they got like busted with their Haribo or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas now I think it's to do with cinema prices have obviously gone up quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
When we were younger, it was a lot cheaper to go to cinema in terms of just paying the price of the film.
Unless you have a Cineworld card, which is only £18 a month. So that could be another.
Which we both have, yeah. We'll get in touch with Cineworld for that endorsement as well. We're going to be both rich men by the end of this podcast. I suppose we should move on to the film.
Let's.
The first thing I want to talk about was the opening scene, which we spoke about briefly before, where there might be some spoilers if you've not seen the film, by the way. But we'll try and keep them. I mean, it's the kind of film that's
not an awful lot to spoil,
yeah,
really.
It's, I wouldn't say it's predictable in the sense that you know exactly what's going to happen with the film, but there's not like any massive surprises.
Yeah, I think some of my favourite films are films where like not an awful lot really happens.
Yeah.
It's more about like character development and stuff like that.
I would say it falls into that category. But yeah, the first sort of scene in the film is where his older brother, the main character Stevie, his older brother goes out and tells him, "Stay the fuck out of my room, Stevie." And he disobeys us and goes in.
Immediately goes in, yeah.
Yeah, and I spoke to you before about how, for me, that was an instant reminder of with my two of my older cousins, who, when I used to go around my auntie's house, if they weren't in, I think there was even times I went round to try and just see if they were there and they wouldn't be in, and I would just go in their rooms
mm-hmm.
and just look at their CD collections and look at. I remember one of my cousins had like loads of toys from the film Alien and he's just sitting like they were so much cooler than like my Star Wars toys. I was like, Alien, like how the fuck was he allowed to see Alien? I don't even know if he ever did see Alien at that age, but he had all these toys from Alien and I just remember looking at all the CDs and stuff, and that's kind of what the first scene of the film was about. And you said that you'd had similar experiences.
Yeah definitely. Well, it was like, well, you'd mentioned the film last night and you said it was like, yeah, it was very very nostalgic from the offset. So I definitely agree. Like he's playing the Super Nintendo in the first scene or one of the first scenes, and like you can hear like the music from I think it was F-Zero, I think was the soundtrack.
Okay.
That was on,
I didn't even think about that, but you also know your SNES.
And he's wearing like a Street Fighter 2 T-shirt, so that's
it's like
a lot of my youth in the mid 90s was very caught up in playing Super Nintendo like with my brothers, or trying to play Super Nintendo with my brothers, more to the point, because like they'd be hanging out in like his room with like the Super Nintendo, and like I would want to go in and like play with them, and then like they'd be like, fuck off.
Yes, interesting. You've got two older brothers.
Yeah, two older brothers.
I'm the oldest, so
I was always the young one that was like trying to
kick in.
And like on the odd occasion where I would be allowed in to play with them, they would like they'd be playing like Street Fighter or whatever, and like they'd be playing each other, and like they'd like have like a third controller that would sling underneath the bed, and they'd tell me that I was controlling like the people like in the background, like holding like a chicken cage or something.
Oh really? It wasn't even plugged in. They would just tell you.
They'd like put it underneath the bed and be like, "Yeah, you're controlling that guy in the background that's like waving the chicken up and down," and I'd be like, "Oh, cool. Sound? I'm okay with that."
Did you buy that?
Oh yeah, 100%. And they used to have like a game, it was the Aladdin game, I guess. It was like around the time that Aladdin came out in the cinema.
I think
Aladdin would like run about, and then you'd have, what was the monkey called?
I don't know.
Abu, I think. He would like just like always run behind the main character, and you didn't have to control him.
Yeah.
But I always got told that like you're controlling the monkey who does every single like jump and like move that the main character does.
I'm pretty fucking good at this game. I feel pretty lax, today.
But yeah, that made me feel like I was like taking part with like the older guys.
It's quite upsetting. No, no always.
Hey, I was happy.
Yeah. What was your favourite SNES game?
There was a game, it was again another film tie-in game. It was the Home Alone game, which we had, that neither of my brothers would ever play because they said it was fucking awful. But I seemed to play it all the time, and apparently it was really, really difficult, but I persevered with it, and I ended up completing the game, and they were like, how did you manage to put in so much time into this almost unplayable game? And like, I remember my brothers telling me that, I don't remember this myself, but apparently the last boss was just a giant rat, and if you've seen Home Alone 1 or 2, you'll realise there is no giant rat in the game. So,
but that's like, SNES, you know, was where they had to be very liberal with like what they could do to make.
Well, yeah, to make a full game out of Home Alone is probably quite difficult.
What was the soft topic? But was it E.T. that they made the game out of? There's documentaries
yeah,
and stuff on Netflix now about how the game was so awful.
Yeah, it bankrupted like Sega, I think, was like the story, wasn't it?
It's not Sega, it's a simple console that you don't ever hear of now. But
was it? Oh, yeah, maybe.
But
they
apparently buried like thousands of
copies. Yeah, in like the desert
or
something. Yeah. And I think for a long time that was like, I think it was like put down to like, it was like an urban myth. But I think, I remember
no,
reading that a few years ago, like they actually found like the burial site as
yeah,
well.
They dug it up and there is actually thousands of copies of E.T. there that they couldn't sell. That's mad. So what I think when you talked briefly there, you said about you like films, so it's not always something that happens, and it's about character development.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, well, I suppose you could argue there's seven key characters, but the main sort of gang, there's five of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how did you feel about all the characters in the film?
I guess
start with Stevie.
Yeah, well, he's like, what, how old is he supposed to be? Like
13,
12, 13?
13 is whatever.
Yeah, and so he's like hanging out with, like, I guess they might be like 17, 18 maybe?
Yeah, I think they might be his brother's age, his brother just turned 18, so.
Yeah, so, I don't know, like, I think it wasn't exactly like your stereotypical sort of like, well, I suppose they're all skaters, so you're not going to have like the stereotypical like jock, stoner, like burnout, whatever. But yeah, I guess the characters he was hanging with, like the what was the kid called that was just a bit older than him?
Ruben.
Yeah, he wasn't in it as much later on, I feel like.
I thought
that was gonna be like more of like a like more of a competition between them, but that sort of like fizzled out, I thought, at some point.
Did you end up scrapping?
Well, yeah, but yeah, I don't know. I thought that was gonna get developed a little bit more.
Ruben's quite adverse to Stevie. Early on in the film, like Stevie sort of appears and he compliments Ruben, and Ruben obviously is used to being the sort of the lesser one in the gang. Someone compliments him and he's fucking buzzing, and then immediately like they ask someone to go get water, and he puts it on to Stevie to go do it. Stevie goes and gets
the
water.
Yeah, like passing on like the sort of the youngest card.
And then I think the dynamic sort of changes after when there's the skateboard incident where he tries to jump the gap and he fucking
face plants down off like a massive roof.
And then the other guys sort of have a bit more respect for Stevie just because he's got balls of fucking steel.
Mad. Yeah.
And that's when the sort of relationship with Ruben turns a bit sour.
Yeah.
But then I think it's quite purposeful that Ruben becomes a background character at that point.
You could be right.
What do you think about my main man, Fuckshit?
Fuckshit, he's the one with the blonde hair.
He was,
I did like him. He reminded me so much of a guy I went to school with, like I said. Like, so much so, like, he had the exact same hair, the exact same characteristics, and he was a skater, and I won't say his name, but I'm sure he probably doesn't listen to Mood Swings podcast, but I could be wrong, who knows. But yeah, that was like, it was almost like it was based on this guy I went to school with, which was kind of weird.
Was he Californian?
He wasn't, no, he was, I think he was from the Brock, actually.
Possibly a slightly different accent.
Yeah. Unlikely that Jonah Hill would have.
I'm really
have encountered
like,
this guy.
I haven't seen. I hope if you've not seen the film yet, and you're listening to the podcast, and you're from the Northeast, please, when you see this film, try and think of the character Fuckshit being from the Bronx. Because I've seen the film, And I know people from the Brock, and I'm really struggling to try and meld the two.
The two cultures don't really seem to... There's no, like, overlap, I don't think.
But you're telling me there's someone out there that characterises the two...
Yeah,
personified.
Definitely, definitely.
Okay, so then there's Ray, who's the sort of older...
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not ages older, but the wiser sort
he's,
of...
Yeah, definitely the wiser character, yeah.
What do you think of him?
Yeah, he was... He seemed like he was, well, like I say, he was definitely the wiser of the two, but which, to start with, wasn't, like, overly apparent.
Yeah, he's quite quiet.
Yeah.
And also the scene with the rent-a-cop, he's, when they're over the
fence,
he's kind of the aggressor there, and you don't really know whether he is, the character becomes a point where he is more chilled out and down-to-earth and more focused. At that point in the film, you think he's sort of possibly a bit...
Yeah, but then I guess you get the... You find out that they're sort of... They were both, like, kind of the same, and then, like, they take different, like, divergent paths.
You mean Ray and fuck shit.
Yeah.
I love how, throughout the film, you don't ever find out another name for him other than fuck shit. Like, they don't ever really hear his real name. Like, as far as you know, his parents call him fuck shit. Like,
well, I suppose you don't really... See, well, I suppose you guess you don't see any of the other parents, really, do you?
No, you don't at all.
But you're sort of, like... You're sort of told that they come from less than...
Well, Foxy...
Less than ideal...
Well, not Foxy. Foxy's parents are made out to
I suppose,
be,
yeah, they're... Yeah,
he's the only one with a car, and he talks a lot about how he's been... Like, his parents have taken the car from him for 2 weeks.
Being hard done by, but the rest of them are actually the ones that are...
Yeah, for BB... more underprivileged
worse off backgrounds
and what do you think about fourth grade?
Yeah, he's a I guess he doesn't really speak an awful lot through it,
but he's like almost a comic relief.
Yeah, he's like he seems almost like younger than Stevie in some ways. Like,
yeah,
there's like a scene at the end where like they're sort of like sitting and Ray's like speaking to the pro guys, and then he's like asking
Stevie's
the 12-year-old, the 13-year-old, being like, "It's like, do you think I should go introduce myself?" And he's like, "Nah, man, don't do it." So yeah,
the thing I found about the whole character group was I felt like, even just watching, obviously I've seen the film twice now, but even after seeing it once, I felt like I've been all of those characters at some point in my life.
Yeah,
like I felt like I've been Stevie, like trying to like make an impression on the group. I felt like I've been Ruben, the guy, you know, we introduce people to. Introduce a friend to like your group of friends, and then you end up feeling like almost the bad guy.
You're being pushed out.
Yeah. I've definitely felt like fuck shit, where you're the one just like everyone else is like just being quite chill, and you're the one trying to get horrendously fucked
trying
up.
Trying to get fucked up, yeah.
And also felt a bit like fourth grade, just kind of in the background a lot.
Yeah, the quiet one. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I've definitely done that role, and then people are kind of quietly surprised by you, which we'll talk about the end of the film later on, but like, the end of the film, I think he shocks them all.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
and then Ray, probably the one I've not been so much, but maybe in my more recent years.
You've not been the quiet voice of reason.
Yeah, but I think maybe in more recent years, you know.
I don't know. I can maybe see it.
Yeah. So also in the film, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but the film deals quite graphically with self-harm.
Yeah, I didn't expect that. Like I said, like when like the film was starting, it said you've also got the warnings at the start, and it said self-harm. But yeah, it was quite graphic from the offset, I guess.
Yeah. For me, that was quite troubling, just as someone like, as a young person, I did self-harm. In most films you watch, and so that self-harm trigger is just, say, maybe not less graphic, but it's more what you traditionally class as self-harm. So I suppose when you hear the word self-harm, without trying to like categorize it too much, a lot of people probably think about cutting yourself.
Mm-hmm,
but
yeah.
In the film, he never cuts himself.
No,
but,
no.
It's
like definitely less obvious.
Yeah, and I think that was, for me as someone, like, I was quite troubled watching it, because like as a young person, I probably went through more of the kind of stuff that he did in the film, where he's hitting himself, and I think he rubs himself down with a brush,
like, yeah, hairbrush,
and he like he fixates himself and stuff, and
With a Super Nintendo controller.
Yeah, which sounds all sorts of weird messages, but yeah, I mean, that was really gritty for me to watch because it, as someone who's been there in the past, that was a lot more the reality of it than sort of the clinical self-harm you often see in films.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said that you don't feel that it was completely clear as to why it was in the
film. I mean, like, I don't know, like, I didn't really fully understand, like, what the roots of that were for him, like, where that sort of stemmed from, like, why he felt like when he was, like, stealing the money from his mum's purse.
Well, I think that's to do with, it's almost like a Catholic thing, I think,
maybe.
Sort of, well, that'd be Catholic, but that sort of instant guilt, and then...
Like,
he felt he had to punish himself right away to
penance, is that what it's called? So,
he felt like instantly
he'd done something bad, so you have to like punish himself.
But I think you sympathise with Stevie in that instance because his brother is pushing him to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But
he himself,
he knows it's wrong, but also he wants the fucking skateboard, so what do you think of his brother as a character?
I thought he was one of the most interesting characters in the whole thing, because like obviously at the start it seems like he's obviously the character that Stevie looks up to, and like he obviously like fucking like beats the shit out of him, like probably more so than like an older brother would, like
normally.
It's not like a sort of like a brotherly sort of like bit of a beating, but like more of like an actual proper hiding. But he still looks up to him regardless, and I guess that's what sets him off, like going to like do what he does with like all of his new group of friends, stuff.
New pals.
Yeah,
I've seen that. I read a review of the film, and they said that Lucas Hedges' character, the older brother, is like he somehow captures the like white boy rage. He's like white boy rage personified.
Yeah,
and I quite agree with that. Like, I don't know, there is some sort of like, especially the scene when he cries, which is quite upsetting.
Aye, when he comes back drunk.
Stevie comes back drunk and...
and he tells him he's a fucking loser with no friends.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's become apparent to like the audience beforehand, it's like, he is a bit of...
You never see him like...
He's never with anyone else, you never see him speaking to anyone
else. He never hints at any sort of social interaction, he's just like...
He's just playing a big man, but to his little brother, but to anyone else, he's...
Yeah. It's quite troubling when you see him like sort of break down.
Yeah, I really like him like that. What's his name again?
I think it's Lucas Hedges.
Lucas Hedges, yeah, he's really good. Like in all the films I've seen him in, he's been really good.
Yeah.
I think every film I've seen him in, actually, he's had like a pretty vocal breakdown. Actually, like in Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah.
He does it very well.
Yeah. Maybe we'll see him in an easygoing role. Maybe the lad will get a fucking an easy break.
Yeah.
I don't know where next point would be. Anything you want to raise, Thomas, within the film?
I don't know.
What do you think of? All the 90s references, do you think it's an accurate representation of the 90s?
Yeah, definitely. One of the ones like really early on, like I noticed, was the purely because I'm pretty sure my brother had the exact same bed sheets as Stevie does, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles one.
Oh, really?
That was like literally the first, like one of the first shots of like the first scene.
Yeah,
was you see those like bed sheets, like yep, I definitely recognise those.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like the first scene, like I think you'd said to me beforehand, like, you know, it was like very nostalgic, whatever. Obviously, like us both growing up in the 90s. But I think the first scene was like sort of like hammered at home, but like throughout the rest of it, I guess I probably, obviously, with the, you know, growing up in Aberdeen and growing up in fucking
Los Angeles
is two very different places to grow up in the mid 90s.
Yeah.
But aside from the start of it, I felt like I didn't really feel much sense of nostalgia, like,
oh, really?
After that, because I never skated or anything, so like.
Oh, did you not?
No, I was never a skater.
So I did skateboard. So like the scene, the scene when he gets given the new skateboard and you see him, and he's getting filed down and stuff. Like, I remember like going to skate parks. There was a skate park in Arbroath.
Yeah.
A smoky wash. And I remember like going through like getting my skateboard, like the tape stripped off the top of it, and getting like, redone with new tape. And someone like, they just put that big massive sort of rectangle on, they filed down with a file.
Yeah.
So it was quite reminiscent for me.
Yeah.
I was terrible at skateboarding.
Yeah, I've never seen you skateboard, that's for sure. So you also you also didn't carry on into your adult life.
By having met, I'd given up, but yeah, that wasn't great.
Yeah, no, I know. I actually did have a skateboard once, although I say I had it. I think it was a hand-me-down from one of my brothers, and again it was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles skateboard, but I didn't do any more than fall off, and I think I actually ended up breaking. I think I jumped onto it trying to do some sort of trick, which I couldn't do, and like snapped in half, and then when that board broke, that was I never stood on another one ever again. So
I skateboard quite a lot. I used to go skate parks and stuff, and even the scene at the start when he very first gets the skateboard, I was giggling a bit, because I remember a distinct memory of there was a hedge outside my dad's house, and I got my first skateboard, and they were all watching me out the window as I tried to like ride it. They said it was hilarious, because like, I wasn't able to see my head and shoulders the next minute. I just disappeared below the hedge, and I clearly fell on my ass.
Destined for great things from that moment, surely.
No, I was never likely to be in a skateboarding movie. But you know.
Yeah, no, I was a... I was more of a micro scooter kind of guy. I had a micro scooter.
They got banned from my school. I went
because everyone like dented their shins.
There was a stage at Walkside Primary School where everything got banned. So everyone went through fads. So like for a while there was like marbles.
What, did you grow up in like sort of like 1920s New York?
I can't explain this, but scooters was a fad for a while. Then everyone got a scooter, and then everyone got banned from taking scooters to school.
Why did scooters get banned?
I can't remember it. I think there was probably...
Schools love banning stuff, though.
Yeah, it's sort of violence, probably. But then I remember marbles, like everyone...
Pokemon cards.
They never...
Did they get banned? They got banned at our school.
I can't remember if they got banned or not, but there was definite controversy around them.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've told this story before on the podcast, but my brother, my younger brother, who was more savvy than me, realised that Pokemon cards were a load of shit. And started stealing all my good ones and giving them to people just willy-nilly as like a popularity thing. So I was like, where's all my best Pokemon cards? And
that is
like he realized, he's just like,
he's buying friendship with,
yeah, he just realized like people
with
like,
your pocket money.
Yeah, he's like, these Pokemon cards mean fuck off, because the thing with Pokemon cards is no one knew actually how
nobody played the game. I actually once played the game. Well, I say I played the game, I pretended to know how to play the game to cheat someone out of their cards, because he didn't know how to play it, and I just pretended that I knew the rules, and I was like, right, we'll play a game for your Bulbasaur shiny. And he was like, alright, cool. So we sat down and played the game that neither of us knew the rules to, and I sort of blagged it, and I got his shiny off him. That was pretty cunning.
Heads I win, tails you lose. Is that what you're
from? No, I was just like, you know, I was like, I had like a few power cards and nobody knew what those things did.
It's a good thing you and my brother weren't in cahoots. God knows what he's going to come up with between the two of you.
I actually made one of my oldest friends through Pokemon cards, actually.
Would you take his stuff as well?
I got the coveted Charizard shiny in a packet that I bought from the RS McCalls and Asda Dice. I remember he opened the packet and be like, holy shit, I've got a Charizard shiny. It's like, this is going to bode very well for my social standing. And I remember I traded, I think I got about like maybe like 10, 15 shinies off this guy at school in exchange for the Charizard shiny, and then blossomed a long and fruitful friendship. So, yeah.
I remember someone in my school traded a Gyarados for something much lesser, for someone who was a bit ignorant of the Pokemon card. And a gang of people went up to the boy and was just like, you've taken full advantage of this person's lack of Pokemon knowledge.
So you'd, you'd unofficial Pokemon card police, sort of policing the...
It was like vigilante justice. I just say, you fucking take the piss.
It's an unwritten rule book, and you've crossed the line here.
Yeah, it's like, you've taken the piss here. You've gubbed this boy in his fucking goggles. Seize it back, game it back, and I think it happened.
Yeah, justice was served.
I think we should move on from Pokemon.
But I don't know.
That was more noise than 90s.
That was definitely 90s.
Okay.
I think, yeah, I'd say that was like, I remember getting the Pokemon game on Game Boy. I think that must have been about 97, 98.
I would have been 6 in 97, in 97. In 98, I would have been 7.
Yeah. No, it was definitely 90s, but yeah. You know, that was a part of the 90s that wasn't covered in this.
Wasn't covered in the film. What was covered was that the character Stevie... have you ever seen the film Kids? It was in 1995, I think. And it's sort of a similar vein. So
I don't think so.
Skateboarders.
No, I don't think so.
So part of what this film was, there's like quite a lot of scenes where Stevie like is obviously grown up a bit too fast. And he's drinking and smoking and...
Falling with the wrong crowd.
Yeah. What did you think? Because I think the film Kids that came out, which just has been compared to quite a lot, was like, when it was released, it was like, this is going to be a wake-up call for all parents, but your kids are actually up to, like, they're taking drugs a lot younger than you think, they're drinking and they're having sex a lot younger. There's an element to that in mid-90s. Do you think it's accurate? Like...
What, in the sense that it would be like a wake up call for people?
No, I just think it's accurate that how he saw it as a 30-year-old boy experiences all these things.
Yeah, well, I mean, personally, I mean, maybe this says more about me being a lame 13-year-old, but I was not doing any of that stuff as a 13-year-old.
Yeah, no, me either.
So, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, personally, like, I didn't relate to that sort of stuff at that age.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that also kind of leads on to the kind of questionable sex scene.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I was hinting at.
Yeah, that was. I mean, how old was she supposed to be? Like,
I don't know how old she's meant to be, but I don't know whether the film, like, I don't know whether the film falls. It's not so much an issue of the film being morally wrong or ambiguous, it's more that the fact that they tried stuff too much in terms of they want to progress Stevie's character from being a really naive young boy.
Yeah, and it happens very quickly.
Yeah.
What seems to be like a pretty, I mean, I don't know how much time was supposed to have passed, but like, it feels like it's only been like a couple of weeks.
Yeah, he says he's not been friends with them a few months, but then he also is like embellishing the relationship that he's got with these guys.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you don't know whether that's I'm exaggerating again, but yeah, I think that's like, as much as I love this film, there's a few things I think with it that are like little things that niggle at me, and that's one of them. I feel like they sort of progress Stevie a bit,
too quickly.
Yeah,
it was maybe a bit not quite believable.
Yeah,
from being like how naive he was to being like, yeah, where he ends up.
Yeah,
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think of the later stage of the film where he is kind of just following what we just spoke about, where he's like drinking pretty heavily and is
taking pills
and smacking his mate Ruben around the head?
Yeah.
Do you feel the same way about that? Do you think it's like it comes a bit too soon? Do you think the film falls down a little bit there?
I don't think it falls down necessarily, but it's maybe not, it's a bit far-fetched, not the right words, but yeah, it's a bit hard to believe that like he sort of, you know, changes his entire character.
It's a bit of far-fetched
that quickly.
It's a bit hard to believe,
and the way that he's like so at the start, like he's obviously very close with his mum, and then like about like an hour into the film, like he is like standing like in this car like yelling in her face, like telling her to shut the fuck up, and it's like, you know
that can happen. Like, you call your mum pretty easy.
Yeah, I guess.
What do you think of his mum throughout?
Well, it's obviously like the you know, it's sort of alluded to that she's like, you know, her his older brother has also got a bit of a rocky relationship with her, because like, you know, he
says, they're always
like, alluding to like she was like involved with sex work like before he was born and stuff.
I don't know if it's necessarily sex work or just that she was.
Oh yeah, well, I mean that's what. Yeah. Well,
I wouldn't have picked up the sex work thing, but that's it. It's different people watching.
Yeah. So. Well, I guess yeah. That's what I picked up from it, but yeah, I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's lots of like guys coming and going, and like, you know, maybe like his older brother was a bit like, you know, didn't get the attention that he wanted. Then she sort of cleaned her act up or whatever. By the time that he's come about, and you know, maybe he's a bit like, the older brother's a bit bitter about it. I know that's why he's lashing out. But then, also, you know, when Stevie starts to sort of like go down the wrong path or whatever, he's like sort of starts to like, you know, realize that he's fucking up and like tries to sort of sort him out a wee bit.
So, the end of the film, I found. I don't know. That was one of the most moving parts for me, was the like the very end. So obviously there's whatever happens, I'll try not to spoil that. But they end up in the hospital, the hospital room, and then there's the scene where they're sort of just
they're all KO'd.
Yeah, and then but then they all end up in the room with Stevie, and then it's like one of my favourite bits of the film. It's just when Forrest Gray's like, he's the one to see something. And he puts the video on, and they're also
they're skate tape.
Yeah, and it's kind of like I don't know. You don't really see their reaction to it. It just, he puts it in, and then you go. But
yeah,
for me, you can very much feel what the reaction would have been. I don't know. I thought that was one of the most moving parts for me. Was just like, for me, like, I don't know what. I'm 27, so I've had multiple friend groups throughout my since I was what 12 or whatever. The age where they start at, and I know that feeling very well, of where you've been in a group of friends and things have got complicated, and you've had fawns out or whatever, but there's always quite often that moment where you get a moment to reflect and you look back on how much
you get like, sight of it,
and you actually appreciate like how much, and you almost sort of laugh at yourselves and each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it happens all the time with like complicated friend circles, and I just think like even like when watching like me and you have travelled together quite a lot, so like in a few different scenarios, so with marionettes or with like Primavera, and they're just in those situations where easily people got on each other's nerves or there's like stress and you end up like getting bitter with people that you're really close to, things are said,
you lose sight of,
but then like as soon as you get home and you look at the holiday photos, or as soon as you're apart from each other for a little while, it becomes like very, very sentimental. Like you'll see a photo, and that's kind of what, after I watched this film, I found myself going back through Facebook and Instagram, just looking at old photos of like,
of
me with groups of my own friends, which I've never really felt myself doing that.
Yeah. So it's obviously had quite an impact. And
But it did, just like, but I like that, just that scene where like you don't ever see their reaction to the film, but you can almost
you can gauge what they're
and I thought that was one of the most moving parts of the film. Well, I think one moving part of it is that the guy that's not, there's never any ill feeling towards Forrest Gray, but he's sort of like deliberately the bystander throughout the whole film.
Yeah.
And then they see that he has been like documented with quite like a very sincere and emotional way. I think the film isn't just them skating when he shows the film.
You get a sense of all their characteristics and stuff. Yeah,
and I thought that was like one of the most moving parts. Mm-hmm. I really thought of that.
I
agree. Yes, I
agree. Yes, I agree. I agree.
I don't know. I just thought that was like quite. I don't know. Like, I spoke about this at the start of the film. This isn't what you'd expect from Jonah Hill, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I guess, like, he, like, I sort of think, when I think about Jonah Hill, I still think about him as, like, fucking, like, the guy that was in, like, Superbad and stuff like that, so, but, like, since that, he's in, like, loads of stuff, and, like, you know, he's obviously trying to be more, like, of a, involved in more sort of serious roles, and like obviously this is like the first film he's directed, so it's obviously like a, it's quite a serious film, so yeah. It's like he's trying to position himself as like.
Apparently, Martin Scorsese was like his, like not helped him, but he got advice from Martin Scorsese whilst he was directing this film.
Really?
And I can't even imagine Martin Scorsese knows what a skateboard is.
Yeah, I can't see Jonah Hill and Martin Scorsese.
Well, I think it's all to do with Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh yeah, I suppose yeah. He was in that, wasn't he? Yeah.
Because he got fuck all money for that apparently.
What? Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
Oh really?
I don't know whether he did or he said he would do for no money. He just wanted to work.
He wanted to be in.
Yeah, he wanted to work with Scorsese. It was essentially. He knew like. I think Wolf of Wall Street was his first. More serious role.
Yeah. And even though he was a bit of sort of comic.
He was comic relief in that film, but he still, you wouldn't have thought he was really cast necessarily in that role.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he said, I'll do it for like,
nothing. For whatever. Yeah, yeah. Just let me be in the film.
And I think that's when he got a relationship with Martin Scorsese. But it's still like, the tone of this film is so different to anything Scorsese's ever done. Like,
yeah.
It's weird to think of him being like an influence on it.
Yeah, no, I personally wouldn't have seen any sort of influence from him in that film, but there was one thing, like, the film looked like it was filmed in the 90s. I don't know whether it was maybe because I wasn't wearing my glasses in the film.
No,
like, it looked like kind of grainier. Whatever it was shot on, that it looked like it was a film that was like you'd have watched like on VHS or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know if this is something that. It's just what I picked up.
I'm sure it probably was like a. I'm sure that's an intentional.
It's been shot that way, but I find the first time I saw the film, I didn't notice it so much tonight, but I felt like the first time I watched it, it starts off grainier and like more grainy and like brighter almost, but then towards the end of the film, it gets. It's almost like the film's more in focus.
Oh, yeah? I didn't pick up on that.
No, maybe it's just in my own head, but like.
But I wouldn't even be able to tell anyway, because like, I was sort of like squinting at the screen the whole way through anyway.
Because you're blind, you thought Jonah Hill was in the whole thing. You thought he played Stevie. I don't know. I thought about that yesterday. I felt like it started off that it was very sort of grainy, and then as the story progressed, it got a little bit like more.
A bit clearer.
Yeah. But I don't know whether that just.
Maybe you're just looking into it and wanting to see what you want to see.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, it's definitely. Apparently
as the story comes into focus, as does the film.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing I would say.
I don't know.
But, yeah, I did read a review where the guy. Apparently, after Jonah Hill showed it at a test screening, someone said, oh, it's so cool that you found this film from the 90s. You're way to release it now. But I don't know whether this is just.
I don't know. I don't know if I buy that.
Yeah, well, this is what I read on IMDb, you know what I mean? But yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like bullshit to me.
I'm not saying it's not. Okay. So. We're going to rate this film.
Okay. Okay.
What is your
rating system? What are you rating it with?
I'm going to go out of 10. I don't like doing out of 5s.
Okay.
But first of all, I want to, like, when I watched the film, I thought there was like a lot of like mental health stuff in it. And obviously, it's a mental health podcast, or it's meant to be. But
let's pull it back in. Let's draw it back in.
It's slowly becoming just me drinking beer, talking about whatever I want to talk about with whoever I want to talk about. But yeah, for me. It's certainly whether through nostalgic devices or through just the way I related to the characters, there was a lot of things in there that I felt were linked to my mental health. But that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know if you thought there was anything in there. If you felt that there was things being pushed through, especially with this, I suppose there is a lot of just the self-harm and stuff in there. If you felt that was a, they were trying to use that as a device throughout the film.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I saw it more as just sort of like, I suppose a sort of like, you know, like sort of coming of age sort of thing, and it's like, you know, like sort of, I don't know.
I'm not stopping the podcast. I'm not getting into this again.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, I can't think what the question was now.
You stop for 2 minutes, you let someone have a piss, and they come back absolutely sozzled. What's going on in my bathroom?
I think like the
Do you think that the Jonah Hill was used this film as a device to portray mental health themes? What's the question?
There was obviously aspects of that, but I don't think that's like. I don't think the film was a vehicle for that.
Not entirely, but I thought there was.
It did. Like with the whole like self harm part of it. Yeah, definitely.
But also, like, I mean, there's a scene at the end that I thought was quite moving, where after he's had the fight with Ruben, and the part is just shot before they get back in the car, where he sits down with he sits down with you went to the toilet actually, see what I'm missing about this.
Oh, when he's like having the heart to heart with him.
With Ray, yeah.
Yeah.
And Ray, he sits down and Ray says to him, you know, at times we think our lives are the worst, but if you looked at anyone else's life, you wouldn't.
Yeah, you realise that it's not.
No, it's bad.
Worse, yeah.
And I thought that was quite akin to like, almost sort of what like you'd be told in therapy, or not even just in therapy, what your friends would tell you if you were trying to appease someone who was going through a tough time. Like, I thought that was quite relevant. And then at the end as well, in the scene in the hospital, and he says to him, out of everyone, I know you're the one that takes the hardest hits.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, it doesn't need to be like that.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's like it's talking about skateboarding. Yeah. Like, you know, like, you're the one, always the one that keeps falling.
Yeah, you don't need to do that.
Yeah, but he's obviously meaning deeper than that. You need to sort of, like, you can look out for yourself more. You don't always need to be the one.
Yeah.
Because he's quite regular. Stevie's quite regular throughout the film, the whole way through.
Yeah, but just because he's looking to impress.
Yeah, he's looking to impress everyone. Like, even with his brother, like, I wouldn't say he lets his brother beat him up, because obviously he objects that, but he, outside of those incidents with his brother where his brother's beating him up, like, you see the scene where he gives him the present and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He's obviously not willingly, but he's being subjected to this abuse, and he's not viewing it with any ill intent in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And even this scene with his mum, which I mean, we viewed too much into this, and his mum's trying to talk to him and his brother, and his brother's absolutely like, having none of it about, like, her, almost like trying to talk to them about her sex life.
Mm-hmm.
And Stevie's just kind of like,
yeah.
Yeah, so whatever. Not, yeah. And the brother is like having absolutely none of it.
Yeah.
You feel like Stevie throughout is like almost like a sponge for everyone else's kind of shit throughout it. And then at the end, Ray's like, you don't need to sort of.
Yeah.
I don't know. Am I buying too much?
No. I guess just like, given how young he is, like, I don't know whether it's like. I don't know if that was like what they were going for with that or not. But you know, you take away from it what you're gonna take away from
it.
That's
so, what I got. That's
what you got from it. So.
I just felt like the whole way through the film, but he, even with like Ruben, he's always trying to appease Ruben the whole way through. I don't know. I can sort of relate to that. Is you never want to be.
But he's just yeah.
You never want
to
be
with him. I also got the impression that it was like, you know, like he's the closest in age to him, so he's just sort of like, he's just trying to.
But even when Ruben's been a bit of a dick to him, he never ever like.
No, he didn't call him out.
He calls him out.
He's the youngest one, and like he doesn't want to sort of, you know.
But he's like that.
Put anyone out or lose his place, and
until quite close to Ed, he never ever pushes back with anyone that's given him shit. And apart from fuck shit, fourth grade and Ray, who are probably the three characters who you'd view as the most likely to give him shit, they're the three that don't give him anything, like any trouble.
Yeah.
It's obviously his mum, his brother and Ruben that are all sort of like pushing on him.
Yeah.
But he never pushes back, I think, until right near the end.
Yeah, totally.
But anyway, that's me just going down a different avenue that I want to talk about. But what do you think of the film? If you think about a square of 10,
I would give it. Like, I did really enjoy it. I would say I probably didn't enjoy it quite as much as you did.
You don't need to compare it to why. How much
but
I
no, I would give it a solid like 7, maybe
7.
Yeah, yeah. It was enjoyable. It was thought provoking, and yeah, it was a healthy dose of nostalgia, which I'm all for. So
yeah.
And you? I mean, the way you were speaking last night, it was like a life altering event.
Oh, but then I'm like that with everything, so.
No, yeah.
I don't know, maybe an 8.5 or a 9.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked Elvis. I've seen it twice.
Favorite film you've seen this year?
Yeah, so far this year. It was better than fucking Pet Sematary anyway.
I've not seen Pet Sematary yet, but I'm quite looking forward to it.
I mean, Pet Sematary wasn't even that bad, but this is a lot better. But I've been talking about Pet Sematary.
Maybe that can be your next podcast. You can talk about Pet Sematary.
No, I can get over Pet Sematary. I think they struggle to get over it. So, yeah, it's definitely my favorite film I've seen so far this year. I'm trying to think the last film that I saw that was that hit me as hard as this.
What was the Winnie the Pooh film?
Fuck off. Saving Christopher Robin.
Yeah.
I mean, that did hit me quite hard.
In a different way.
The last film I can remember going to without any real expectation and it being quite as effective as this was probably Room,
mm-hmm.
which is a whole other podcast itself. But and that was good few years ago. But this is for different reasons. I went to this film thinking I'm probably going to quite enjoy it. It came out being like, this is a film I'm going to be watching.
Yeah, like go back to like.
Yeah, I'll go back to quite a lot.
Yeah.
Which I don't get as much nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. An 8.5 or 9 out of 10.
That's a solid praise. I'm sure Jonah Hill will be delighted
if
to hear
you. If you listen, Jonah. It's
a solid thumbs up from Nathan Brown.
It's good. Always up for Superbad 2 as well. Like don't write it off quite yet. but Mid-90s was good, so if you want to stay right and direct him, it's fine by me, but also please don't run off too bad too, because
you have his blessing,
whatever you want to do, mate. I mean, he's in one of my other favourite films, get him to, in fact he's in quite a lot of my well, Wolf of Wall Street is obviously brilliant.
Yeah.
And Get Him to the Greek is one of my favourite films.
Did you watch that series Maniac that was a Sunday?
No,
Netflix.
I've not watched it yet. That could be a nice podcast.
I wouldn't waste your time with it. sorry, Sean.
On that positive note, thank you, Thomas, for doing this on short notice and enjoying my desire to speak about
You're
this
welcome.
Film.
Yeah, you finally got me to do the podcast in some shape or form.
You finally got me to do it.
Well, you have asked me a couple of times, but I always said like.
No.
No, essentially.
Right, cheers.
So we'll take that one off the list.
All right, guys. Did you enjoy that episode? I really hope you did. I really enjoyed recording it. I think there's a little couple of bits where you can hear how full of beer and curry we were. The official sponsor for this week's podcast was Stella Artois. It wasn't, guys. I wish we were sponsored by Stella. But worth mentioning, we were drinking... the Fit Like E Brewery New Pilsner. They're not a sponsor, but I mean they're non-profit, so they don't need to sponsor us from there to get an awesome shout out. They are what do they call it? Is it a micro? I don't know. They brew. They've got this beer out. It's a Pilsner. It's very nice, but. All the profits go to Mental Health Aberdeen, which is a charity that I am 100% behind, and I might be doing something for them myself in the not too distant future. And I know some other people that are doing some cool things. There's a Sparathon in May, like the 20th of May or something, I think it is, at one of the gyms in Aberdeen to raise money for Mental Health Aberdeen. I know a few other people doing some ace things for it. So, yeah, it's a very, very worthy cause. And this beer company is donating all their profits to it. And it's not even that expensive. I think I paid £1.80 for the can. I bought two cans and we had one each. But yeah, I paid £1.80 a can, which isn't expensive for a craft beer. You get that. I got it from the Aberdeen Whiskey Shop on Union Street. And yeah, I'd recommend it. And I mean, how often can you have a beer and know that you're donating to a good cause? Not that often. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I hope you enjoyed Mid-90s if you've seen it. Yeah, I hope if you've not seen it and you listen to the podcast that you now want to see it because we've made it sound good, and also that we've not spoiled any of it for you. We definitely try not to do that. But it's hard to talk about a film for 50 minutes without potentially ruining a little bit of it. I mean, that's almost the length of the fucking film, to be quite frank. Right, please get in touch with your views on Mid-90s in the podcast in response to mine and Thomas's reviews. I feel like I didn't introduce Thomas properly in the intro. He is a musician. He has a project called Tam, and he also has another project called Erskine Linus. They're both good, both really good. I've done some of my own music with Tam in the past called Brave Face. I don't know if anyone will be interested in hearing that. If you are, I'm not going to blink it in the description, but if you want to hear it, then you can give me a shout and I'll send it to you. And also, as I said, he did the intro music for this podcast. So if you like that little day, then you should definitely listen to his stuff under the guise Tam. It would probably be the better stuff for you to go and have a listen to. And yeah, thank you very much for listening. Next week, I don't know, it'll be the last one before I go to Thailand. I'm not sure whether I'm going to do another solo one or whether I'll have a guest on, whether I'm going to do something about my build up to Thailand or whether it's going to be totally annoyed. Haven't decided yet, but I'm hoping almost definitely be a podcaster next week, and I won't get bogged down with travel plans and not put anything out. I will not do that. Okay, thanks guys. Cheers.